go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's about 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the, East Coast, hence the Eastern Daylight Time part. 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. This program is live. It's Friday on the front porch of a somewhat truncated variety. And I'm rode hard and put up wet. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Just got back from picking Ferg up at work, and took him to work this morning. Got to be up at 5:30 again tomorrow morning to take him to work. It's a little rough. Just a little rough. But I'm glad to be here. It would not have been right. I couldn't have stood it. It would have been just icky not to have been here for this Friday on the front porch. And, of course, there you go. You're planning. You see, you got these ideas. Okay, we'll work on talk about this story. We'll talk about that story. And then, of course, the NRA roulette wheel of death lands on Virginia Beach, Virginia. It's about 7 hours from here. It's coastal. It's a beach. It's literally a beach community, beach city. Lovely. Big Navy presence there. I got a lot of family over there. And they're all okay. We checked. But, I don't mean to be jaded or anything. I've just run out of anything to say about these things. And that sounds awful coming out of my mouth. I know it does. But it's the same thing over and over and over again. Somebody with a gun decided to destroy the universe for several people who didn't. And the shooter's dead. And we will now have the steady litany of, oh, that shooter must have been crazy. Which drives me batshit. Because there's no proof of that. I know maybe the mental health professionals would say otherwise, but in a country that is gun mad, I don't think it is prima facie insane when people do what they are tacitly encouraged to do. As long as there are Republicans in the government of the United States of America, as long as there are Republicans, we will not do a damn thing to prevent any of this. Can we just kind of be clear about that? Lady B said, I just heard about the shooting in Virginia Beach. Don't know how close that is to your home, but hope you and yours are okay. Jesus, this is madness. Earnestly praying to and for humanity to stop this bullshit. Well, but there's a lot of tax-free money that supports the principle of not stopping this bloody bullshit. It's just a fact. It is the final day of May. June starts tomorrow. Oddly enough, there's this little phenomenon I've observed here for decades. and older people than I know it as well. If you ever want to do something around here, like say maybe we'd want to have a horn in sometime, I'd schedule it for the first Saturday in June. It doesn't rain on the first Saturday in June here. Now, we had a thunderstorm go through earlier that sounded like an artillery barrage. Lightning all over the place. It won't happen tomorrow. The first Saturday in June is reliably beautiful. So I'm kind of looking forward to tomorrow. I'll get to see the sunrise. And then see if I can't make something out of the day. Right. But other stories to talk about. Hey, look, obstruction of justice. Oh, look, it's John Dowd. Passing notes to Michael Flynn's lawyer, reminding him how much Donald Trump really, really likes him. So we'll talk about that, too. So since we don't have just a whole bunch of time available to us, let's run over to the... And by the way, if you want to participate... There should be, I think, a Skype link up at headon.live. And just click on that, and that'll take you right into the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, and where we gather around the extraordinary, ordinary round table. And you can be part of it if you want to. You're mighty welcome to. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
I'm good. The Skype link is up. But Asa did his thing.
Okay, great. I literally got in the door, got in the chair, and didn't even look. So I was just antsy to get on the air. So thanks to you, and thanks to Asa. Much appreciated, Sparky. How are the little foxes? I saw that you did take some pictures.
Yeah, you made me feel guilty about it, so I went out there and tried.
Oh, God. Me with the guilt again. Daggummit. I got to work on that. But
I took a whole bunch of pictures, but I posted the best one with all three of them in there.
Oh, they're cute. And is that the old tree that the last limb came off of and died? You were talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the limb is down on the other side of the tree. And they're living at the base of the tree on the side I can't see, because they pop out about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was messing with them a little bit earlier. I got a coyote call out in the shop that belonged to Brian, and I was blasting on it. They perked up and got all weirded out when I did it.
Well, you're providing a learning service. Hey, kids, if you ever hear this, go the other way.
I think one of them's the mom, and then there's just two kids.
So they must be grown then.
Because the tail, well, the one has a bigger, bushier tail. But they're, you know, the foxes don't get that big.
No, they don't.
So she must go out and hunt at night and come back and... And they stay there, or they sleep, or whatever, I don't know. But then they stir around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know what they did last night. It was a hellacious thunderstorm. I think I posted that picture of Grady underneath my desk.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, there was another thunderstorm last night, even towards the end of your show. He was curled up underneath the desk again. And... it was looking like another one was going to form, so I folded space back into the house.
Well, I think that was probably wise.
I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but they said one was supposed to happen.
You know, the power blinked earlier today. Even with the issues of going to pick up Ferg and everything, there was a certain amount of doubt about getting on the air simply because I wasn't sure if the rickety, antiquated, coal-fried power grid would stay up. And then I got a call from Appalachian Power telling me that there may be power interruptions early next week because they're flying one of those helicopter saws over my general area, and they'll probably saw down a few power lines accidentally. Yeah, because it's hard to do precision work. You ever seen one of those? Those things are amazing.
Mm.
I mean,
no.
It's a saw. It's a big saw, and it's attached to the bottom of a helicopter. And the helicopter lifts off and carries the saw over into the woods, and just they sort of hover it and swing it along. And the notification today said there is a possibility that a stray branch will interfere with a power line. I'm like, oh, if Appalachian Power is admitting there's a possibility, it's not a possibility, it's a goddamn certainty. So, yeah.
Well, we had a power outage the other day. When I went to the grocery store, it happened that right as I was leaving the grocery store just before, didn't notice it in the grocery store. But the traffic signals all over town were all messed up. And then I get home, and Judy says, oh, the power had been out for a while, but just came back on just before I came home. But then our phones wouldn't work half the night. She wanted to try get a doctor's appointment for an ear doctor because her ears are plugged up. And she wants to get a wax, see if there's wax in there, what? She's having trouble hearing. So she's trying to call the medical center we go to south of town, and it kept getting weird recordings that couldn't get through all day, so just screw it till the next day.
Wow. Well, let me run over. I see that we got Sailor Chick in the room, and you're over in Virginia Beach, aren't you? Waiting. She's got a green.
I can't. She's muted. I can't unmute her. I can only mute her. I can't unmute people.
Okay.
They have to do it themselves. But
okay. Well, maybe.
Should be listening though.
Right. That's. Yeah.
'Cause I know Steve's here.
Yeah. And again, I saw somebody just tried to come into the group a minute ago. You have to use the link over at headon.live to get into the Skype chat. You can't just call me directly. Because I think if I tried to merge that, it'd make a mess of things. And I don't want to do that.
That's the easy way.
Okay, well, hopefully Sailor Chick will come on and maybe provide a little bit of background on anything that hasn't been put out in the media.
Hey guys.
Oh, there she is.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You're there in, are you there in Virginia Beach?
I'm just on the outside. I'm actually a member of Virginia Beach EMS, and I was not on duty today, and I'm kind of grateful for that. But
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, my fellow EMS providers have done a great job, I think, today. Everybody has, but we train for this. We drill for this. We've started really drilling in earnest with the other city agencies last year sometime, maybe the year before, with classroom work and then in the field. And we knew the day was going to come. We were going to have to deal with an MCI like this, mass casualty incident, and it happened today. And
you train for it, but you hope you're not going to have to, but there it is.
You're right. You hope you never have to ever deal with something like this. I'm sitting here and I'm just really shook up about it. I'd like to think I'm pretty jaded, but it finally happened here. It landed in our laps, and we're dealing with it. And I don't know. I'm still trying to process it.
So, I mean, so, I've seen the basic details, 11 people, more wounded. Your hospital was swamped.
Virginia Beach General Hospital is a level 2 trauma center, and they had to go on diversion for a little while. One person was taken to Norfolk General Hospital, which is, they went by air ambulance. They went by Nightingale. Helicopter, I believe, shot in the jaw or the neck. I believe the shooter is deceased. The cops engaged him right away because they have another building right there in the courthouse complex. It's a police headquarters. So they responded pretty quickly.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. They said there's a couple of buildings there.
It's a municipal complex. So you have a number of administrative buildings there, including courthouses, police. There's a small rescue squad there, one of our 10 rescue squads. In fact, if you saw the blue ambulances on TV today, that's a, you know, I'd like to shout out to my friends at Princess Anne Courthouse Volunteer Rescue Squad. You know, the great guys and gals over there. It's a complex with a lot of buildings. And this was building two. It's a large administrative building with a number of offices in it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What offices are in that building? Do you know?
I don't know all the offices in there. It's just like public utilities and things like that. So apparently there is not a magnetometer there that you have to go through. It's basic security at a desk. And he was a current employee, from what I gather, and he went in and he shot people that he worked with.
Jesus.
That's what I know.
And it's a he. Of course, it's a he. God almighty.
So I don't know what type of weapon, just know it was a firearm. I don't know if it was a long gun, a handgun, what it was. So I don't know.
Well, our thoughts go out to your colleagues there in the EMS that I trust they'll be provided counseling, and
it's available for people who need it. And we try to look out for each other. A police officer was also shot. One of the police officers responding to the shooting, he was shot in the area of his vest. He's going to be all right. And the Kevlar saved him. So the
shooter was going to try to hold out for a little bit then.
It looks that way. They engaged him. He fired back. So, or maybe he didn't care if they killed him, but he's not breathing anymore. So, but it's just a shame. There's about half a dozen other people injured as well. I don't know what the status of those folks.
I assume that the number 11 dead includes him and then the six who were.
No, it's 12 including him.
Oh, it's 12,
it's 12 including him.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so I appreciate you being in the room this evening, and I appreciate the update from on the ground there, because one of the most frustrating things about these things is that information is so, hard to come by.
Well, I was asking people, I was listening on the scanner actually at home, and I was asking my friends on Facebook. I said, look, if you know anything, please don't say it on social media for a while yet, because I heard the SWAT medic counting dead people. So as he was going through the building with the police, and if you were listening on a scanner, you might have heard code black or DOA or something along those lines. But it's just, imagine just going to work in the morning and there's no guarantee you're going to come home. America.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I said what I said, because we've got one political party that has no interest in stopping these things. And I'm sure that they're busy. I'm sure the GOP is busy cranking out press releases that say it's too soon to talk about this. But, if not now, when?
Yeah. They're going to send their truckloads of thoughts and prayers, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't even know what to think anymore.
From the best of your knowledge, if you know, did he just go through the building, or did he go to one place?
That I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't know. I know they were looking on multiple floors of this building because it's a big building.
Yeah, it looked like it from the, there was a helicopter shot that I saw.
Yeah, it's a pretty big building. I'm sure they had to clear the entire building. That's their procedure. And then they probably cleared the entire complex after that to make sure there were no other shooters or anything of that nature. So that's their procedure. It seems to have been in one area. And these things happen so quick. Apparently, this just happened in a matter of minutes. So, I don't know how you prevent them unless you have better gun control. I mean, it's not about, I mean, you're talking about, oh, they're going to call him a crazy guy. That's not necessary. Yeah, we don't know anything about this guy's mental health status. Well, but we do live in a culture where solving your problems with a gun is acceptable.
Right.
That's the culture.
And when I checked in on social media, the first comment I saw was, well, there he goes, a guy with a gun going into a building full of people that don't have guns.
I mean, what are they supposed to do? Everybody's supposed to carry a gun to work now? We all live in an armed madhouse?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what they want?
Well,
that's insane.
It is, and they have a fundamental misunderstanding. You know, I don't know if it's willful or not, but when you're getting ambushed, it's an ambush for a reason. You're deliberately trying to keep people from having a chance to defend themselves.
Right. I mean, he walked in. Apparently, it was really close to close business on a Friday afternoon. So he might have been counting on, you know, a delayed response, people not paying attention or what have you. And he probably still had his employee badge. And he walked in and he did his thing. They weren't, you know, he was a familiar face. You know, nobody thought one way or the other of it. And the rest is, you know.
You know, in a way, and I don't want to be triggering or anything, but it reminds me of that statistic relative to sexual assault, that most sexual assault victims know their attacker.
Yeah.
The wheels are falling off the wagon, Bob. Christ, man.
It's just incredible, you know.
It's going to be an agonizing time for that city, and you know, it's a lovely place.
We're in a busy part of the year now. We're just opening up. We're opening up for, you know, tourism. We've got festivals going on. We just had the big Something in the Water music festival that Pharrell Williams set up, and that went really, really well. We had 90,000 visitors just for that, and a couple of other events going on. And, some thunder happening outside my window. But we've been trying to polish up our image as a city and get more people to come and visit and enjoy and stay. And now this. And tourism is the least of my concerns right now, but it's just, you know, it's this. You always think of your place as something that this will never happen in, and it just did.
Yeah.
It's really got me shaking.
Imagine the hell that these 11 families are going to be going through.
Oh, yeah.
That could be us any day now.
Could be anybody.
If we get this shit fixed, it could be us any day. And that's something we really need to sleep on.
Well, and the other thing that's worth mentioning here, for the 11... For the 11 dead, there will be heartbreak, and I can't imagine even trying to, you know, make arrangements for a damn funeral. You know what I mean? But for the people who were shot and survived, then you reach the nexus between the brutality of our gun culture with the brutality of our healthcare system. For the people who were uninsured, and out of those six, there's a possibility one or two are uninsured, maybe. Who knows?
Possibly.
Oh, more than likely, yeah.
And if that's the case, their hell has only begun.
Yeah.
Sorry you got shot. Here's your $30,000 bill.
Here's your $500,000 bill.
Yeah.
Especially for the air ambulance. I am happy to say that in Virginia Beach, we have probably the largest volunteer-based rescue squad organization in the country. We do have some paid professional medics, but most of our personnel are volunteer. And we have 10 rescue squads in the city. and we transport people mostly for free. So you will not get an ambulance bill from us. You might get billed for some consumables that we have to replace at the hospital.
Well, but your transport's free. That's huge. Sailor Chick, what is your name again, hon?
Why?
Well, I don't want to call you Sailor Chick. I'd like to call you by your name.
Okay, Nancy.
That's huge, Nancy, because I have got hit with ambulance bills, and they're not cheap.
No, they're not. Some places.
No, $7,000-$8,000, you know.
Yep. Some places as much as $4,000 just for a basic.
And, you know, right. And, you know, some states, I imagine Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia probably has one. I dare say maybe most states have something called a crime victims compensation fund.
I think we do, but I would have to look that up.
But you've still got to go through, you know, you got to get a lawyer. And you've got to go through that miserable process. Nobody just steps up and says, to the best of my knowledge, it would be nice if there was some journalism done on this.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, they don't just step up and go over and say, don't send these people a bill. In fact, we know they don't do that after the Las Vegas shooting.
Right, right.
And somehow or another, that, you know, because the other side is so good at, oh, no, it's too soon to be talking about anything. Oh, no, don't politicize it. And so we never talk about, A, you know, they would prefer we didn't talk about this at all. And then we certainly don't talk about the aftermath. The funeral costs, the medical bills, all of those things.
Well, then there's a question.
Yeah, but funeral costs are going to be cheaper than
Sailor Chick,
hospital
you're
bills.
Not clear yeah. on whether the guy was engaged and shot by authorities or whether he, quote, turned the gun on himself. So we don't know that.
He was shot by cops.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is one of two, these things end one of two ways, almost without exception. Either the authorities kill the person or the person turns the gun on himself. In a high number of the cases, if they would just go to that last step and do the turning of the gun on themselves, that would eliminate the possibility of a lot of things going bad. Okay? But they're not going to do that. They want to make a statement. They want
to
make a scene.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay?
The guy was a pissed off former employee.
Yeah, that's what I got employee. That from the report.
But you're going to have PTSD that's going to stretch on for who knows, you know, for an indefinite amount of time.
Everybody. It affects everybody.
Sure. Anybody that's even nearby that's seen it, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So,
right.
Yeah,
I don't know why he was disgruntled. I don't know if they're getting ready to fire or discipline him. I don't know what the deal was with him.
I really don't know much more than what you guys know so far. I'm just saying this is the first big mass casualty incident we've had. Other than, we had an F/A-18 crash into an apartment complex here several years ago, but we considered it a miracle because nobody was killed. But, this is a pretty quiet area for the most part. We do have shootings and stabbings, but this is the first big incident like this. And
it's shocking.
It's going to take some process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awful. Just awful.
It is awful.
Well, and you, Bob, you call it right. You talk about the relentless NRA wheel of death.
There is, and you never know what's going
to
this. Yep.
And until we dissolve that terrorist organization, and that's what they are, let's not sugarcoat this thing. Until we dissolve the NRA, this shit's just going to keep happening.
Right, and until I'm probably using a bad analogy given the current state of politics. Until being a member of the NRA is as socially unacceptable as being a member of the Klan. This will continue. Until people, you know, just, oh, I'm sorry. You know, you need to go hang out with your NRA friends because I don't speak to them. No, it'll continue.
Well, I'm reading the Mueller report right now, and it goes into detail somewhat. I haven't read through the whole thing yet, but they talk about NRA money involved in the campaign interference.
Oh,
and
yeah,
things like that. That's it should be criminal.
The NRA, that's why I refer to it now as the National Ruble Association.
Yeah, with the Russian money flowing in.
Yeah,
and the NRA acting as the national distributor.
Right, and Mitch McConnell was a recipient of it. Lindsey Graham was a recipient of it. Donald Trump was a recipient of it.
Well, a shortcut to approaching the issue, you talk about prevention. Now, I personally think it's not a bad idea, just generally speaking, to keep guns out of the hands of terrorists, criminals, and lunatics. And those are broad terms, okay? I'll grant you that. But I would say never vote for anybody who in any way stands in the way, obstructs moving forward to keep the guns out of the hands of criminals, terrorists, and lunatics.
Well, see, but you run across a problem.
It's very simple.
Go ahead, Sparky.
Don't vote for anybody that has an R after their name.
Well, but what do you do about the D's who've cashed the NRA checks?
Well, I don't have a D to cash the NRA check. I have an R as my congressman.
Right, right, and I get that. But I
voted against him for him and the one before him. We haven't had a Democratic congressman in 40 years.
I've got a Democratic congressman, and I'm looking to see what he's gonna do to address this. And in Virginia Beach, it's Elaine Loria. She just got elected, and she's a Democrat. I want to know what she has to say about it too. Hopefully,
you'll check her voting record on the last gun bill.
I will.
It's sitting in the Senate diet with a death certificate on it.
And earlier today. You know, because goddess of irony. Let me see if I can find it here. Nope, that's not it. Doggone it. One thing I was going to point out is that. There it is. Now, this story was datelined yesterday in Charleston, West Virginia. And it comes from the statewide right-wing news service. And it refers to U.S. Representative Alex Mooney. And it kind of goes back to what Scott was saying about terrorists, criminals, and lunatics. We're supposed to technically be keeping them out of the hands of the terrorists and the criminals. But it's that lunatic part that I keep coming back to time and time again, saying that, you know, the distance between lawful gun owner and awful gun owner is precisely the space that the trigger has to travel in order to cause the firing pin to engage.
Bingo.
And the only way you're going to keep guns out of the hands of lunatics is to have psychological testing prior to ownership. I mean, consider that the Senate Republican majority has refused to even allow the renewal of the Violence Against Women Act to be considered. And that has language in it, and part of the reason they're doing it is because their masters in the National Ruble Association don't like the language where if you're an angry guy who decides to beat hell out of your spouse or significant other, that you get your guns taken away. Okay.
We have that law in California.
Yeah, you've got it on a state basis, but I'm talking about the Federal Violence Against Women Act. Stand by one second, okay? Because I want to handle. So one of our members of the House is a Republican by the name of Alex Mooney. He's actually from Maryland, but he moved across the state line because he couldn't get elected as a Republican in Maryland. And he announced yesterday that he's optimistic that a, wait for this. I mean, get the hockey puck. This is a real screamer. He's got real hopes that a bill reducing regulations on purchasing and selling firearms to out-of-state buyers could receive enough bipartisan support to pass out of this House of Representatives. That's what I was saying earlier about what do you do when there's a D behind their name. You see, we've got at least two presidential candidates on the Democratic side that I can think of off the top of my head who have eagerly, joyfully, happily cashed checks from the NRA. One of them even used to go so far as to brag that they kept a loaded rifle under their bed because freedom. And this candidate had small children at the time. So I think it gives us an idea of the degree to which our work is cut out for us. So maybe pay attention, keep an eye on something called the Firearms Interstate Commerce Reform Act. Looney Mooney says it's only an 18-vote differential out of 235 Democrats. 18 can vote for it, and it could pass. It is H.R. 2443. Ironically, it was introduced. It was introduced into the House by Steve Scalise.
Yeah, but Nancy Pelosi doesn't have to bring it up, does she?
No, it doesn't even have to get out of committee. And
isn't Steve Scalise still recovering from wounds?
Yes, yes, he is.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Unbelievable.
And it's being billed because, you know, nothing comes out of Alex Mooney's mouth that hasn't been pre-approved by the National Ruble Association. He describes it as a recommitment to the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. West Virginians should have the freedom to be safe in their homes and communities. I will continue to lead the charge on this effort because it is worth fighting for. They never quit. They never stop. So they want people to, and it's already enough of a problem. You know, we've got a sort of a mercantile triangle down here where people will bring heroin, fentanyl, whatnot from, I mean, and, you know, don't ascribe any meaning to this beyond what I'm saying, but it comes from Detroit. They bring the drugs down, they sell the drugs, they take the money they get for the drugs, and they get people in West Virginia to go into West Virginia gun stores and buy guns, and they come down with a trunkload of drugs, and they go back with a trunkload of guns. So what Mooney here and the NRA are trying to do is cut out the middleman, you know, that West Virginian that they use to go and buy the guns. Randy in PA brings up the idea of you can institute gun liability insurance. You can stem workplace bullying. Randy says, I was the target of workplace bullying for 30 years. It made my blood boil, but I never took action. But the gun liability insurance, why not? You want to own guns? Show proof of insurance, just like when you own a car. I mean, when you consider the assaults on a woman's constitutional right relative to her body, how is requiring, and you know, most of that has been done through attempts to fool around with the particulars of the procedure and making the facilities meet insane regulatory standards. Cool. Well, sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, and by God, we can do the same thing with the Second Amendment. You want to be part of a well-regulated militia and own a shit ton of guns? Cool. You insure every one of them. And the minute you and the minute your premium lapses, well, bub, you better hope that gun doesn't get used in a crime. I mean, I you know, there's a lot of talk about the 1994 crime bill now. What about, say, a life sentence for anyone whose gun gets used in a crime? You know, bring those lawful, awful gun owners to heel. Yeah. But I'm dominating all this. Joe, was that you jumping in a minute ago?
Yeah, I've got a really good friend up in a very wealthy area near Medina, Ohio. And Jeff is a trustee for a surrounding area of this town. It's a well-to-do town. There was a double murder. A guy shot himself, or shot his girlfriend, then shot himself. Well, my friend Jeff, the trustee for this township, has received death threats should he try to do anything, pass anything that would curb guns in that little community.
Jesus. So they're just gonna, you know, it'll just continue to happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, this township, this little, it's just a very well-to-do, I mean, it's the last place you expect a double murder. And just for people to threaten him like that, you know, and that that region is just remarkable.
And, yeah, when you say Medina, I know you're talking about a money community, because that's big-time golf, right?
I'm not sure if that's where the big-time golf is, but let's put it this way. A lot of Cleveland Browns, Cleveland Indians have retired there. There's some players still living there. It's just a very wealthy community. And I'll tell you who's from there. The witch on the Supreme Court, Batchelder, she's in the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati. She's from there. And her goofy-ass husband, who was the head of the Ohio Assembly, also still resides there. So that gives you an idea.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Well, and there I was thinking all day long that we were going to be talking about the Michael Flynn disclosures, huh? Anybody want to take a run at that?
I heard him read it and everything, and I just don't understand it.
Well, it was a matter of reaching out to Flynn's lawyer to try to, it was a voicemail, just to remind him that, you know, there might, you know, that Donald Trump still likes you, which is nudge, nudge, wink, wink code for you could still get a pardon. Yeah.
Oh, it's like Cohen said, you gotta know the Donald Trump code.
Yeah. Hey, Rob, this is John again, John Dowd. I'm sympathetic. I understand your situation. Let me see if I can't state it in starker terms. If you have, and it wouldn't be surprised, and this is what happens when lawyers talk on the fly and they can't sit there and draft every word and parse it all. It wouldn't surprise me if you've gone on to make a deal with and work with the government. I understand you can't join the defense, so... That's one thing. If, on the other hand, we have this information that implicates the president, then we've got national security issue, or maybe national security issue. I don't know, some issue we gotta deal with, not only for the president, for the country. So you know, then you know, we need some kind of heads up. Just for the sake of protecting all of our interests, if we can, without you have to give up any confidential information. So. If it's the former, that would be implicates the president. You know, remember, what we've always said about the president and his feelings toward Flynn and that still remains, but, well, in any event, let me know, and I appreciate you listening and taking the time. Thanks, pal. That's straight up mafioso speak. That's
like...
Go ahead.
I thought there was a part two. They were going to have the transcript of Flynn talking to Kislyak.
Well, that's where the problem arises. Because they kind of had to release this, but the Department of Justice is being a little cute about the Kislyak part.
They're fighting the judgment, then?
Well, they're fighting the court, trying to make some sort of an argument that, it could interfere with the president's foreign policy powers. Yeah, that's it. No, really, I mean, so the Kislyak stuff must be really damning. Because remember, the judge in this case ordered that all that stuff be provided to her so she could read it. Yeah, this is a nasty little mess. And it's probably damning as can be. So, it's
another thing to wait for to get it get in there, because they still haven't sentenced him.
Right. No.
Rachel was going to talk about those things tonight, I'm sure, because she brought it up last night that they had to be released today.
Wait a minute. I got a cowbell for Randy and PA. Kislyak followed by Dansliak and Screwliak, I guess. Yeah, that was good. That was good, Randy. So, well, let's keep things moving around. Billable Rick, what's up with you this evening, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, Bob? Hey, I'll catch you later, Brian, okay?
All right.
Okay, bye, bud. My son just called. How's everybody doing?
Well, you know, just kind of watching America go to hell in a handbasket. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I got some unpleasant news. I meant to send you the article. I don't think I got around to it. I know it gets old, but can we talk a little bit about impeachment?
Oh, sure. No, I'm game.
Hey, okay. Hey, Rick.
Hey, did you hear me on Randy?
Yeah, I did. It's always good to hear from you, brother.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah,
how you doing?
I don't want to hear what you got to say about impeachment. Please, go on.
Okay, well, you all know the Office of Legal Counsel, those, scholars, those wizards who were able to come up with the idea that you cannot impeach a sitting president.
Yeah, based on something out of the Aaron Burr trial. Yeah, got it.
Right. And the geniuses from the John Mitchell administration, Attorney General administration, came up with that. And then that happened again in the Clinton years during the great cleanup hunt. So that's the policy. You cannot indict a sitting president. So the only remedy is impeachment, right? We all know you got to.
But with the understanding that provides no criminal relief.
Right. No criminal relief. Just now, though, what is it? May 31st, 12 days ago, those geniuses at the Office of Legal Counsel came up with a new opinion. And their opinion basically says that the president has the constitutional right to prevent any of his current or former advisors from testifying before Congress, no matter what the subject is or why Congress wants the testimony. So it's a broad base. It's not even executive. I guess it is kind of executive privilege, but they're not even invoking executive privilege because they know it's a loser.
No, it's monarch. It's monarchical privilege.
Yeah, it's monarchical privilege. So, I mean, if that's the case, then how is Congress going to be able to investigate whether impeachment is warranted? if Congress doesn't have the ability to compel, you know, the people who are in the inner circle to testify. So, you know, I'll tell you, this Bill Barr to justice, he's a real player. And I don't know if anybody caught the interview on CBS, the Puff interview. He was like sitting in front of a fireplace with his.
Oh, that was horrible.
The old man sweater.
Yeah, the everybody dies comment.
Anybody caught you on CBS, the Puff. The everybody dies comment. I don't know if I caught that part of the interview.
Yeah, he said, I'm not worried about my legacy. I'm not one of those people who believes in the Homeric idea that we live on in eternity through having things being mythologized and having things written about us for 1,000 years. Everyone dies.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like it was an homage to the American Carnage inaugural speech.
Oh, God. Well, exactly. I mean, he probably loved that speech, you know?
Didn't he also say something about criticism? He's, well, I'm at the end of my career. Criticism doesn't faze me, doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Pardon me. He is such a fucking toad and a liar. I mean, Trump has definitely gotten his Roy Cohn that he was looking for. He's got to be overjoyed with Bill Barr to justice, you know?
Well, Rick, it takes a lot of doing to outsmug John Mitchell, who was Nixon's attorney general.
Yeah.
But Barr has done it. I mean, there is not a more smug bastard on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Barr can end his career the way John Mitchell did.
Oh, there you go. That would be nice.
There you go.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I'm kind of an advocate of actually impeaching Barr. And forgetting about Trump, just do like an investigation of Trump, but go for it with Barr, you know. And I mean,
he's been a blight on society for the last 40 years.
Yeah. Some of these guys, I mean, you know, what's the old thing? You know, to kill a snake, you got to cut the head off. But to kill a vampire, you got to pound a stake through its heart. And these people keep coming back. You know, you have John Negroponte, who's now back, Elliot Abrams. I mean, all of these, you know, the ghouls gallery comes back whenever.
Yeah, Ornstein Bolton, sure.
You thought they were dead, and they pop back up, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's like the.
And, you know,
none of them
are hurting for money. This is not about money. This is about.
And that's a fucking shame, man.
This is about their ongoing desire to exercise homicidal power.
Yes, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby, you could start a new game called Whack-A-Moran.
That works, Joe. I like that.
good one, Joe.
Well, hey, this is a good one, too. Steve in New York says, yeah, everybody dies. That may be true, but we still remember Benedict Arnold as a traitor.
Exactly. Well, there's a song, Everybody Dies. The Hollywood Vampires sung that when I saw them in concert. Everybody dies, dies, dies. Everybody dies, 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 and so on.
I'm the only one that sings on this program.
Oh, sorry, Bob. I'm practicing my karaoke.
That was Jim Carroll. That was Jim Carroll of the Jim Carroll band.
Okay.
Yeah. He actually did die.
They covered them. Oh, Jim Carroll did die. Yeah, well, there you go.
and Rick, can you top my Tom Jones show? I know you go to a lot of shows. I'd like to hear where you've been.
I don't know about it. I'm seeing. I think I'm going to go see Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits.
Mrs. Brown, you go to lovely do yes, that's my
Keith
Peter Noon impression.
I was going to do a challenge. I was thinking of it in the shower tonight, Bob. I was going to like do a challenge. Bob, you've got a lovely program challenge or something like that.
Mrs. Bob, you have a lovely
Mr.
challenge.
Bob, you've got a lovely program.
Bob Kincaid, you've got a lovely
Bob Kincaid the eighth, I am. Bob Kincaid the eighth, I am.
Jesus, here's Ted Mack. when we need him. Or
oh, gee, wait. Oh, that's
Chuck
wait.
Barron.
Steve in New York. You're the only one that sings on this program. Is that what you call that? Oh, that's ow.
Yeah, that
left a mark. Ouch.
I will sing if I take a nose.
Oh, you
Bob,
probably can.
You're supposed to not sit on your grill, Bob. Did they ever tell
you
that?
So can you, Bob. You got a good voice, man.
You do.
I can't carry a tune in a bucket.
Nah, that's bullshit. You
do pretty well. You would rock with karaoke, Bob, for sure.
Oh, dear
you
God.
You ever tried it?
No.
You ever tried
No.
Oh, you got to do it, man.
No.
Give us another round of that, Mrs. Jones. You have a lovely daughter.
I don't know. I think you should do Leon Redbone, you know, walking stick.
Oh, there you go.
Walking stick.
Lost him. Oh, that was crazy. He was only 69, I guess, huh? Or,
yeah,
I think so.
God, I was so bummed out when I saw his obituary yesterday. And I didn't realize he was only 69. That's not old in today's world.
No.
That's when my dad died back in 2000.
Yeah.
So, you know, he moved from his parents were from Israel, and they moved to Cyprus, and then they ended up in Canada. So he spent most of his life as a Canadian. And I always thought he was a lot like Cohen, the guy that just died last, the singer Cohen. What was his name?
Leonard Cohen.
I always thought those two were kind of, they had the same kind of a voice.
Well, I had never heard of him. I saw him a couple of times on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Carson was a big fan of him. He was on at least once or twice a year.
Are you talking Leon Redbone or Leonard Cohen?
Leon Redbone.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, let's stop. Freeze. Who the fuck is Leon Redbone?
Oh,
what?
Oh, come on.
I think his most famous song is "You Were in the Right Place."
You're
at the wrong.
I know. I'm gonna get crucified for this, but I'm always honest with the whole.
Is that a song? That's one of his songs.
I don't know
right?
who the
no.
hell that is, man.
No.
All right, I give up.
I was in the red place at the wrong time.
That. I forget who that was.
Okay. All right. Got it. Wasn't that dramatic?
Yeah,
okay. Got
yeah,
it.
Big Bad.
He was like a
Big Bad Bill is Sweet
Van
William
Alley.
Now.
Okay.
Vintage songs.
Did
he
sing
he
with
was...
the group that he was popular with?
No. Not the group Redbone.
What the
Leon Redbone.
Done wrong?
Leon Redbone.
Yeah, here we go.
I don't think that was his
Your
name.
Age is showing, Steve.
Leon Redbone hit songs. Here we go. Shine on Harvest Moon.
That was his biggest one.
Lazy Bones. My Walking Stick. Diddy Wah Diddy.
I like Shine.
No, not that one.
Diddy Wah Diddy.
I could sing you bluegrass songs from the 1800s, but I'm not going to do it. You know,
he did Baby It's Cold Outside in 2003.
Yeah, Rick.
Please
and
don't talk about
Doctor.
Me when I'm gone.
That's one of my favorites.
Oh, God.
Hey, Rick, when you're thinking of Right Place, Wrong Time was Dr. John.
Oh, you're right.
Dr.
That was
John, yep.
No, but that one, Please Don't Talk About Me When I'm Gone. Way back toward in the earliest days of this program, I tried to quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using the patch.
Couldn't keep it lit, could you, Bob?
Little sucker. And I hated to smell that burning plastic.
Did you scratch on it? How many times did you scratch
I was,
on it?
No, I'd slap it and give it a rub.
Hey, Bob, do you realize today? Is this a coincidence? But May 31st is actually WHO's World No Tobacco Day.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well,
how's that?
So the reason that song sticks in my mind is because with the box of nicotine patches came a little insert that said, "We're here to help. If you're having a hard time staying quit, call us at the nicotine quit helpline or the smoking
There's
quit
a job from
that.
Hell.
You didn't call.
I called.
You did.
It was over the weekend, and I was having a crisis, and it's not like you've got a sponsor or anything like you do in AA or any other 12-step program. You know, and it's the weekend, and you're just trying to get through the weekend. You're slapping the patch, and you're rubbing the patch. And I called the the smoking quit line,
the nicotine hotline.
I called it.
Nicotine Anonymous.
Wait for it. I called this line.
I called this line.
And the first thing I got was voicemail telling me that their available hours were 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
And then the system kicked me over
to hold music.
Oh God!
Now this is the smoking quit line, and it was the Muzak version of "Please don't talk about me when I'm gone."
No. So, Bob, you mean Muzak, that elevator shit?
Oh God! Of course.
But I recognized it immediately, and I'm sitting there, like, "Please don't talk about me when I'm gone." I'm like, "God damn it! I'm trying to quit smoking. What are you doing?"
Maybe they thought you were calling the suicide hotline instead, Bob, and put me on hold for that.
No, if it had been the suicide hotline, the hold music would have been Van Halen's Jump.
On a continuous loop, right?
Oh, shit, that's funny.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, are we here?
I'm here. Some of us are. Can I say something, Bob?
Yeah, go ahead, Sparky.
I'm almost celebrating my 11th year of not smoking.
Good man.
Yay.
Good for you.
Give him a cowbell.
Absolutely.
Good for you.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
I'll be 20 years cigarette free in August. Who would have thought that was possible? I mean,
congratulations.
God damn, I was a hardcore committed. Well, most radio people, tell me if I'm wrong, Bob. Most radio people don't smoke as many as they light and put down.
That's the absolute truth. Go get a record. That's the absolute truth.
How many years? Burn in the ass.
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, back when you could still smoke in the control room, you had an ashtray over there. You'd light one up, you'd set it down, and you'd go about your business. And as long as that thing was over there burning in the ashtray, you were all right. And on the midnight shift, you go and you drink 4 pots of coffee.
Yeah.
That's why I can't handle caffeine anymore.
And what's weird, Bob, when I would get off the overnight shift, I'd stay up a couple of hours and then go to sleep about 10 in the morning. I could sleep on 4 pots of coffee and 2 packs of cigarettes.
You get used to it.
And then by the time 1996 rolled around, I'd drink a cup of coffee and be certain I was going to die. You know, heart, you know, right on out of my chest, right into orbit. And
Bob,
so I figured out I'd done too much.
Yeah.
I quit drinking coffee about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
How do you stand it? God.
It'll give you tachycardia.
I'm going to go get another cup of coffee. I'll be back, guys.
You know, I
the weird thing is, I mean, I've learned to live without smoking cigarettes. I smoke a pipe occasionally, but that doesn't really count. But if the doctor called me up and said, well, we've looked at your numbers and you've got to quit coffee, I would have, first I'd get a new doctor, and then I'd have my number changed if they tracked me down somehow. There's no way I'm going to go without coffee. Even my instant shitty Taster's Choice coffee. I mean, I've got to have at least 3 cups to feel remotely human. I mean, Jesus.
No, that's the thing. I mean,
my morning drink now is water with lemon juice.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Hot water with lemon. It's excellent.
No, this is ice cold water with lemon juice.
Sorry, I drink hot water with lemon juice. I haven't been sick since I've been doing that. Hot water with lemon. Squeezed fresh lemon. It's delicious. Just saying. Hi, y'all.
Well, I just get the little squeezed bottles from the store.
Oh, those aren't good. You got to get the real lemons, my friend.
That's a Robert Johnson / Led Zeppelin tune.
Lemon song.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
We've got a. Maybe I'll start trying that. We've got a lemon bush or tree right out front.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's Darlene.
Yeah.
I'm going to forward you. I got permission from Dr. Bill. I'm kind of in a discussion with him about whether or not the Constitution allows for the indictment of a sitting president. He's leaning towards what the DOJ is saying, that it does not. So he said he's going to look into it a bit more, but I'll send you the email conversation that we're having, because I think we should talk about this a little bit more.
Probably a good idea. I'm guessing he's basing it on that sort of negative language, not there where the impeachment clause is, but the part that actually talks about what the effect of impeachment is and isn't.
Well, he signed Article 1, Section 3, I think it is. I'm beginning to think that maybe that's not the most important thing. I'm beginning to think that Robert Mueller is directing our attention back to, impeachment's sort of penultimate, but I think the integrity of our election system really is the critical piece here, because if we don't get that straightened out, we're screwed.
He posted that on a Facebook post in the virtual center. Yeah. Number about his reading the Constitution and the different articles and all the rest of that. And Tom Hartman was talking about it the other day, and I don't tweet, but I tried to pass it on to Tom Hartman because he was also talking about it. But it is on his Facebook page.
Yes, you're right. It is. Yeah, he was referencing Article 1, Section 3, Paragraph 7, that the indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law of the individual can take place after removal has occurred.
But wasn't the criteria, the justification for that ruling or that opinion, that it would be too disruptive? I mean, how much more disruptive is an indictment versus an impeachment process? To me, they're like different forms of disruption in a way.
Dr. Bill's argument was not having to do with the way it was justified by the Department of Justice about not doing it. It was over Mueller's decision. Yes, he quoted the Department of Justice memorandum, but whether or not Mueller was correct in not being able to indict a sitting president, and there is, in Dr. Bill's opinion, a view of reading the Constitution that would say the impeachment has to occur first and then the criminal penalties can be assigned. But until the individual is impeached, particularly with the president, that a normal court case cannot proceed until the impeachment has happened. And in what I read through it, and Rick can probably blow me out of the water here, was that that might apply to virtually all constitutional officers in the United States government, not just the president.
As far as not being able to impeach them while they're still sitting?
Being able to indict them while they are sitting.
I think you can, because that precedent has been tested. Spiro Agnew was... He was indicted by the state of Maryland for income tax evasion, but he had to resign.
Indeed, he was.
But that was indicted by the state, not the federal. I think Trump would be indicted by the state of New York for financial crimes in the state of New York, but over collusion or obstruction of justice at a federal level, I think Dr. Bill is talking about the federal impeachment has come before the indictment.
Yeah, and see, I'm looking at the same paragraph, and I simply don't read it that way. It is simply
okay. So
it is,
it's Article One. What, Bob?
It's Article One, Section Three, Paragraph Seven.
Okay.
And it says judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. So what they're saying there is this is definitely not a criminal proceeding. Okay? I mean, that's abundantly right. Clear. And then there's a clause, but the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. And I think the argument coming out of that is that the language about the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable establishes that the impeachment is the condition precedent, and I simply think that that is an overextension of the language, because it doesn't say in there. I mean, you can read it the other way as well. That the president is always liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment. That they're not saying the impeachment has to come first.
The big word there is nevertheless.
Well, and the other big word, Darlene, is but.
But and nevertheless.
But yeah. The party convicted.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Work here. Work with me here.
I'll forget it.
Just hang on to it. Jot it down or something, but let's get through this. If the impeachment was the predicate to the indictment, why wouldn't you say, and the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable?
That's true.
Yeah, good point.
That's true. It is the conjunctive
It conjunctive, which is what is the argument is, but this makes it disjunctive.
And there's a colon the colon, which I think is an interesting punctuation mark there. Maybe I'm wrong, but
I'm going to type this language in the chat so y'all can see it. Okay.
Thanks.
Stand by for a minute here.
That colon
now,
is
the
kind
other of side of this. In my looking at. Is that 45 has been said, well, I haven't been convicted of any high crimes or misdemeanors, therefore I cannot be impeached. So if you can't be indicted and found guilty of a high crime or misdemeanor, then you cannot be impeached because you haven't been convicted of a high crime or misdemeanor. So it gets wrapped in this incredible circular logic bullshit.
Right.
The game being played.
And that's that. You know, the framers, the one thing you can say about them is that they did not set up this Constitution to be an act of futility.
I don't think they knew we'd have an asshole of this degree. Do you, Bob? I mean, seriously.
Well, I've said in the past that they tried to anticipate every eventuality. No one can do that. But the fact that the impeachment clause exists, and if you go and look at the Federalist Papers, you will find that they were anticipating this. Yeah. And if you look at the Federalist Papers in terms of how they discuss the Electoral College was put forward by Alexander Hamilton as a buffer against the popular vote going to a poltroon. Okay? A self-interested con man. And Hamilton said, no. Well, you know, if the American people lose their minds and they elect somebody who really shouldn't be president, the Electoral College will operate to prevent that from happening.
That's cool. Bob, you're fairly knowledgeable in the law. Just one quick question, and I'll get out of here. I won't bother anybody.
Don't stop that. You're not bothering anybody.
Let's just assume, and Rick, I want you in on this too.
Okay.
That the Congress tries to take Trump down, they can't because the Senate, Mitch, and all that, McChinless, you know, says no. Or Mitch won't even pick it up. But is there any chance he could be criminally charged once he leaves office?
If the statutes of limitations have not run.
Right. Well, yeah. What are the statutes? I mean, worst case scenario, what are the statutes?
5 years for obstruction of justice, I believe.
Yep.
Well, but now, wait a minute. Hang on just a second.
What does that mean?
Yeah, hang on just a second. If the statute of limitations is running and he is not subject to indictment for a period of time, i.e. from when he committed the offense until the time he gets out of office, the statute of limitations should be in abeyance because the ability to charge him has been in abeyance. And so the statute of limitations should start again when he becomes available to be charged.
Agreed.
Well, again, that's an untested proposition of law. That's a point I've thought. It's kind of been assumed that the statute is told or suspended while somebody can't be charged. But I'm not so sure that that's the case, because there's no specific law or statute that says that. Okay, that's a presumption based on DOJ guidance that a sitting president can't be indicted. So I would be very loath, if I were a prosecutor, to rely on a tolling of a statute of limitations, in order to charge the guy. Okay, once
I would definitely
office.
Argue for it.
What's that?
I would definitely argue for it.
Yeah, the problem is there's a principle that statutes of limitation are strictly construed against the government because people's individual liberties at stake whenever the criminal law is being applied against them. So that's something that you have to overcome as well.
But Rick, what about the ancient premise that a criminal should not be able to benefit from the fruits of his crime?
Well, yeah, that's a nice maxim. Where is it in the law the law of restitution adopts that maxim, of course. You know, you force people to pay large sums of money. Let's say if they commit tax fraud, they pay whatever the tax amount of the tax fraud was.
Going back to the framers and the founders, wasn't their general intent and mindset to avoid, whenever possible, if at all possible, any impartation of godlikeness or regality in the leaders of our government?
Well, kind
of executive, judicial, and
kind of, but more importantly, they had the English history before them as prologue. You know, Shakespeare said, "What's past is prologue."
Yeah,
and they understood that
Steve from New York has joined the conversation.
Oh, okay, cool, thank you.
Hey, Steve.
But what they had before them was the real world knowledge.
I'm good. I put myself on mute because I'm walking through Midtown.
Okay, cool.
Okay,
but
Steve.
I had to get in on this because this is a great conversation.
So what they had before them was the real world, real time knowledge that when you've got a king who is above the law, the only way to stop a lawless king is to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they acknowledge this.
Well, no.
And Scott, please, this is serious. Wait.
I know it's serious.
That was the reality. And, countless English civil wars that ripped that country to pieces had transpired directly as a result of that. And so they debate, how do we get rid of a bad president, or generally speaking, a bad civil servant?
Mm-hmm.
And they reached back to merry old England, and they found this parliamentary procedure that was known as impeachment. And they then debated what they wanted the impeachment to be about, and what grounds it should be, and what language they should use. And they came to the high crime. There were a couple of biggies for them: treason. I mean, if you got a president who commits treason, if you got a president who goes to war against the country or gives aid and comfort to its enemies, and that was kind of put, and the aid and comfort part was kind of put in there as a warning to future presidents not to get too cozy with Mother England, because England was still an enemy. They put treason in there. They put bribery in there. They expressly stated those. And then they threw in other high crimes and misdemeanors as a term of art to describe malfeasance in office of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
And they,
kind of a catch-all. Kind of a catch-all.
Right, and these points were made plain back in the 90s during the cleanest hunt. That was, you know, that's sort of the reason that the Republicans went forward impeaching over consensual oral sex. Because you can impeach, because it is a political act, you can impeach for anything. As long as the House finds that what they are impeaching for constitutes a high crime or misdemeanor.
Right.
Well,
it is what they say it is, basically.
With this notion of impartation of regality or a godlikeness on the part of a leader was anathema to the founders and the framers. How is it then, all these years later, we find ourselves being stymied by an opinion of a cabinet level agency 40 some years ago? I don't know. I just can't get my head around.
It wasn't as anathematic as you may think it was, Scott, because Alexander Hamilton was out there proposing that the head of state be a constitutional monarch.
Mm.
And it got him in some shit, and he backed away from it. So, and again, this is just a suggestion. I've read excerpts from it, but I cannot find it online. There is a Senate manual on impeachment.
Mm.
It would be beneficial to find that and to read it.
I would say so.
I'll bet you the government printing office has it somewhere for a few bucks.
Can I put in a quote? Can I put in a word for the Declaration of Independence? Because it's all about, you know, the transgressions of the monarch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the precursor to the Constitution. And I would think that that would have to have had some sway. They're not wanting to have a unitary, all-powerful, monarchical type of presidency or office of the presidency.
Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of times people do, you know, quote the Declaration of Independence in legal writings and so forth, but it really, it's just kind of a statement of principles as opposed to anything that's binding, unlike the Constitution. You know what I'm saying?
But I would think, correct, you're absolutely right, Rick, but I would think it would kind of form the basis of thought, you know, that went into the formation of the Constitution.
Actually, Darlene, it didn't.
Oh.
Did not? Okay.
No. The Declaration of Independence was largely forgotten almost as quickly as it was published. It was Abraham Lincoln who revived our interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
He took an interest in it, and it was practically a dead letter by then. But you are correct insofar or to the extent that you note that, you know, they list that Bill of Grievances.
Right.
Against the king, which is a way of, you know, they're not saying, hey, somebody over there, go cut his head off. They're saying, we wish to peaceably be separated from England.
Right.
Because of all these things.
What was this?
And inferred in the document is that the people who were breaking away as a colony and soon to become a nation would prefer that we do it differently, that our system of government not include any ability for abuse to occur. That's what gets me. It just troubles me.
Well, I mean, the Constitution.
Madison said, if men were angels, there would be no need of government.
Right.
And Darlene, I'm sorry, you were going to say something, please?
I don't remember. Sorry.
Dadgummit.
All right, Bob, we need to pause for a more. Moran report. Can we do a Moran report?
Oh, we got a Moran. We've had a sighting.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All, yeah. There's a guy named Colin Moran. who plays for the Pirates. He just got a hit and drove in a run, actually. That's the actual truth.
Oh, my God, a Moran sighting. Oh, gosh.
And then our second Moran is Clint Eastwood. He's 89 years old today, so fuck him.
Okay.
Well played, Joe. Well played.
I think Joe's looking for a cowbell there, Bob.
Okay, yeah, I can get it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rick.
Can I?
Oh, Rick gets the thank you, not the guy with the cowbell. Right?
Hello? Can I say something really quick?
Yeah, go, Steve. No, say what you got.
I always looked at the, I am in the can't indict a sitting president camp. And I always found it's very simple and practical to me. I didn't need all the analysis. It struck me as if you allow someone to indict a sitting president, you had the before impeachment and removal, you have the odd situation where a person is indicted, convicted, and sentenced to prison while also sitting in the Oval Office. And I thought, as a very practical matter, it was kind of like, well, of course you got to remove him before. Otherwise,
a reverse Eugene Debs situation, right, Steve?
I say it again, I didn't hear you.
That would be like a reverse Eugene Debs situation. He actually ran for president while he was in prison.
Yeah, well, and Bob will probably know this name. Jim Trafficant ran for Congress from Youngstown while in jail.
Oh, sure.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah. Oh, you know him. Beam me up. Yeah, the guy with the really bad hair, but the wife is a hairdresser.
You'll figure,
no,
right?
And you know what, Rick? I'm sorry. I meant to call you. I just haven't had a chance to.
Oh, no worries.
I haven't forgotten. But I always looked at it. I'm going to mute because there's so much noise around me right now. But I just wanted to get that in there. That's my simple 2 cents, very practical. You know, the conundrum is, what if you convict after an indictment somebody and they're president, mm-hmm, and they're a convicted felon?
Well, don't go away yet, Steve, because I kind of look at it in the opposite direction. If you've got a conviction that's gone to final judgment, then the high crimes and misdemeanors is res judicata. It sails through the House, and the Senate is supposed to look at it on oath or affirmation and say, okay, got to go. I mean, they were designing a system that they thought would function, remember, without political parties, without what Madison referred to as faction.
Factions, right.
In Federalist 10. So I don't see the same inherent conflict there that you do.
Well, you know, and the other thing too is I don't find the res judicata argument, for me, I don't find it applicable at all in an impeachment, in the sense of a court proceeding versus an impeachment. Impeachment is not an impeachment and trial, or a ruling in a court should have no bearing on an impeachment and trial, because it's not in either way, whether or not the impeachment and conviction happens first, or if an indictment and conviction happen first, they're both completely separate.
Yeah, I agree. That would present.
I mean, I don't see, you know, I don't see how res judicata would apply in any kind of in an impeachment, or the other way around, because one is a judicial, you know, maxim, so to speak, and one is purely political.
Well, I think it rises beyond maxim, Steve. I think it rises to the level of final judgment, that there's nobody else who can opine as to the rightness or wrongness of the determination. I mean, that's why the Supreme Court is the final word, you know, like Marshall set forth in Marbury.
No, I understand. But, and again, the primary reason for that, or I want to say not the primary, but I don't want to say a primary reason, because there can't be more than one primary reason. One of the reasons for that is to, you know, the quote unquote, preserve judicial resources. And preserving judicial resources and impeachment have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, that is a reason, but it's also to prevent. It's to have things be final once and for all, whether it's for judicial resources.
I get it. I think it's in the context of a judicial proceeding.
And when I mentioned the idea that we should probably try to find that Senate manual on impeachment, the few things that I've found in there, they go your way, Steve, because in the case of the impeachment of a president, the Constitution makes clear that the Chief Justice sits as the presiding officer. And
speaking of the devil, Sparky just posted a link to that, Bob.
And if
you can find the manual 170.
But the interesting thing though is that let's say an evidentiary ruling goes to the Chief Justice, and he rules one way. The Senate can then overrule the judge.
I don't know. I think, and hey, Bob, I'm not going to be your sycophant here.
I just had to throw that in because
Brain emailed you about.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hey, Steve, stop telling us how to be sycophants, okay?
Yes, exactly. I almost look as impeachment as almost a. I don't even look at it as quasi judicial. I think it's a completely separate process. It's in a completely different branch. There aren't the rules. It doesn't have the rules. You know, for instance, the federal rules of civil procedure, or any state rules of procedure, are completely outside and inapplicable in any impeachment context. I understand what Bob is saying is not necessarily that race judicata should apply or must apply, but it should at least be a consideration.
Well, in the impeachment process, the impeachment part in the House, isn't there testimony and or evidence
they can
submitted?
They can,
but
yeah.
That's different. You're not resolving an issue. That's the grand jury. It's like what a grand jury finds is not binding on any petit jury. But what a petit jury finds could very well be binding on a grand jury, because that's where the issues are actually litigated. Nothing is litigated in an impeachment hearing. It's just an evidentiary hearing. It's a grand jury, so to speak.
And for instance, you can go into a grand jury and you can indict on the hearsay of an investigating officer. You do not have to bring in every fact witness to make them testify all over again. The cop can testify, and the juror and the grand jury can find a true bill based on what the cop said, and there's no obligation to provide an adversarial proceeding there and have somebody else come in and say nuh-uh. So
right, and exactly, and consistent with that, Bob, it you very well could have a situation where a piece of hearsay which would lead to an indictment or an indictment, but that same piece of information would not be admissible in a trial.
Bob.
Yeah.
I found your rules in that PDF. It's on page 231.
Okay, I'm opening it up.
Rules of procedure and practice in the Senate when sitting on impeachment trial.
There we go.
231.
Yeah.
Did Steve have a question for us?
Of that PDF.
I'm going to go
hey,
back
Steve,
on mute
did you have a question?
Noise, everyone.
Thanks, Steve.
Sure.
Have a great weekend, Steve.
Hey, take care, Steve.
231.
Steve from Georgetown was going to say something.
Rules for impeachment.
I think he split.
Did he?
Yeah, he just did.
He left.
I'm sorry about that because he asked good questions. Yeah.
In some conspicuous place, just fill them out. Sergeant of Arms.
I'm bringing Steve back in. He ain't getting off that easy.
How can you do that? He has to push the join button.
It looks like just a form.
Oh, he's unavailable. Okay. Let's see here. I saw that too.
First on the writ of summons. That's on page 230.
Well, it does refer to the managers of impeachment, and they come from the House of Representatives. Those essentially are the what you'd call the prosecutors. And so it seems to me that if you're going to use the adversarial method, which you kind of do in impeachment, that Mitch McConnell, if he brings forward, if he actually has a hearing, I think he has to let the House managers decide how they're going to do the prosecution. I don't think he can overrule them necessarily. What do you all think?
No, he has already.
All he knows, there's a lot of pages there.
He has already stated that he has the absolute power to deal with it lickety-split and have done, and make sure that none of the evil deeds of Donald Trump come to light.
He doesn't even have to take up the case.
No, he has to take it up. No, he has to take it up.
Well,
okay.
Well, didn't he have to also take up the the advice and consent on Merrick Garland, and he didn't do that?
No, there's weasel room in there.
Okay.
My argument was that failure to act, that if you say we're not going to hold any hearings, you've waived it.
Right.
But his argument was the failure to act is rejection without a vote. I mean, that's some really tormented logic.
Right. And you were arguing that with Obama, he could have said failure to act is actually an affirmation of the nomination.
Yeah.
And clarify for me, what function does John Roberts as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, what is his function then if he can be so easily set aside or overruled?
You might call it a figurehead, Scott.
Well, I guess I might from now on.
So you're saying there's nothing that allows that wiggle room for McConnell. He would have to hold the trial.
Well, he has to hold something.
He has the
right to define it as just barely above nearly nothing as to be nothing.
And his criteria, you got to understand, if he's got to hold something, it means he has to put something else down. In this case, bags and bags of dirty money. So whatever he holds, he ain't going to hold it long. He wants to end the process as quickly as he can, I would think.
Well, what he's got, Precious Lindsay and that article that I read specifically referenced Thom Tillis, is that we're not going to give them Democrats a forum for doing their politics. As I mentioned the other night, Thom Tillis betrayed his own ignorance when he said, I see it as just a purely political process. Well, yes, you goddamned idiot. It is a purely political process because that's what the framers said it was.
Yeah.
Because it's not civil and it's not criminal. And it is driven by political determination. And, one of the more interesting, I'm sorry, Sparky, go ahead.
Page 230 has a form summons if you want to read it.
You know, and Nancy Pelosi.
Somebody being impeached.
And it's interesting, Nancy Pelosi's take on it, because she's more or less saying that there's nothing in the Constitution that specifically states you can't indict a sitting president. She had said that recently in some sort of. I don't know if it was a town hall or whatever it was. She was.
I think she was at the Commonwealth Club.
It was at the Commonwealth. Okay.
I think so.
It was like a panel discussion or something, Steve. She was being asked questions. Yeah, I think we're talking about the same thing. And she said there's nothing in the Constitution that specifically says you can't indict a sitting president, which is sort of a different angle on what we're talking about. And I would think she would know after all the years she's been.
Well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that she's an attorney, but she definitely knows her crap.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I was going to say one thing from a historical perspective. it is weird or ironic how many times Aaron Burr keeps popping up in all of this. Because, again, in the OLC memo, they cited Jefferson's claim that he was immune from having to come to court as their argument for why you can't indict a president. Go figure. But again, the first impeachment trial was of a Supreme Court justice, and as Vice President of the United States, Aaron Burr presided over that and established, and everybody, friends and enemies alike, agreed that he was absolutely brilliant in it. And it was a matter of trying to impeach it. And see, this is what we mean by political process. It was a matter of trying to impeach a judge because the judge was issuing rulings that the administration and the Congress, the administration's allies in the Congress, didn't like. And Burr saw right through it. And that's, that's worth digging up. But in terms of Jefferson's complaint, he was trying to have Burr murdered in the name of the Commonwealth of Virginia. It was the same trick they would later use on John Brown. John Brown was not a citizen of the Commonwealth of Virginia, but he was hanged for treason against the state of Virginia. So, thanks for finding this, Sparky. I'm gonna spend some time with it. And could I prevail? It's just kind of a, because of the way things are set up here. Could I prevail upon you to email me that link?
No problem.
Appreciate it. I really do.
That's what the research staff does.
The ad hoc research department. Yes.
And do you realize that you can also, the Congress also issues tickets. You've got to bear a ticket to come in to an impeachment.
Oh, it'll be, if there ever was one, you know, the 15 minutes that it'll take for the Senate to run it, it'll be the hottest ticket in the country. But the other thing I was going to add, if you want to, you know, really do a deep dive, the entire transcript of the Clinton trial is out there. And that's where I had to go to find the oath that the senators take. And the oath that the senators take is structured in such a way that they don't even have to, if you're sitting on a Pettit jury, you are very carefully instructed on how you are to go about the business of being a juror. There's nothing in the oath that the senators take that says that they actually have to follow law, that they have to follow right from wrong, that they have to follow principles, or that they even have to follow the rulings that the presiding officer makes.
So then basically it's like when they say the impeachment of for whatever crimes is whatever Congress says it is, and it sounds like trial, conviction, and removal is also for whatever Congress says it is.
Exactly.
At that point.
See, back in the 90s, Darlene, there were people who wanted to call Monica Lewinsky to testify. And the Senate said, no, we're not going to do that. And remember, this was a Republican Senate, just like it is now. But
right.
But
well, that's where it was going.
But
in
Trent,
a way,
but
doesn't
Trent
the
Lott,
complexion?
I was going to say, but Trent Lott wanted to have just enough spectacle to try to harm Bill Clinton without having so much spectacle that it would rebound onto them and make it clear what a sham the thing was in the first place. And so what you get if you go and read that transcript is you get all these goddamn senators standing up and pontificating regardless of what the evidence is. Because there is no such thing as evidence.
Well, what, if anything, changes, Bob, if November 2020 has come and gone, January 2021 has come and is underway, the House and the Senate are now democratically controlled, and Trump is still in office. In other words, there wasn't a electable Democrat he went up against in 2020. With a Democratic Senate and House, what, if anything, changes? Wouldn't that be a more advantageous moment?
Well, you might get something more closely resembling a trial on the merits in the Senate, but until you get that 67th Democratic senator, Donald Trump is going precisely nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And see,
have to convict.
That's the other reason that I say that it's contrary to logic to say that you can't indict him until he's been impeached. Because, you know, there's no guarantee that the Senate is going to do its damn job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I mean. It almost becomes a meaningless process.
Right. It's rendered absurdist theater. Yes.
So, you know, and our whole system is supposedly founded on remedies. So you've got a meaningless process which offers no remedy in terms of the bottom line root problem to rid ourselves of a meddlesome narcissist, aka or criminal. Jeez,
well,
it's
the problem. It doesn't work, Scott, is because of the partisan nature of politics today. In a different era, you know, when the Constitution was drafted, there really were no political parties, as far as I understand. It didn't really happen until, you know, Washington, maybe in his second term. You had the Federalists, anti-Federalists.
Rick,
you know?
Actually, what happens is political parties develop in large part as a result of the debate that takes place in the Constitutional Convention.
Well, that's true.
Because
the Federalists, anti-Federalists,
right?
Yeah.
They split into two camps, you know, as to what the character of the federal government was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that's why you get, you know, that's why you get Madison. You know, Federalist 10 is fascinating.
Mm.
And you can see him. It's almost as though he's at war with himself. He tries to, you know, he inveighs against faction. And then he comes back around and says, but I guess we're going to have them, so we'll try to figure out some way to deal with them along the way.
Mm.
But for instance, that impeachment that Burr presided over, no one, you know, Jefferson wasn't trying to have him hanged. It was simply a matter of trying to get him off the bench so he could get someone more amenable to him on it.
Right.
And so in that case, impeachment actually worked because it was bullshit, and the Senate recognized it for the bullshit that it was. And at that point in time, you know, maybe there's what, 30 senators, 15 states, maybe. And so 2/3 of 30 is 20. And they could not get 20 senators to agree to remove him from office.
Hmm. I'm looking at these rules here.
I need for you to fact check me on something, Bob.
Yeah.
Quickly. It's just a side note. You listen to the people on the right wing discourse, the crazy discourse today, and every third word is something against the perceived elites. Weren't the Federalists the original elites?
The framers were the original elites. The Declaration of Independence, going back to what Darlene was talking about, was drafted by elites. It's not like the Constitution was framed by illiterate goddamn dirt farmers with shit between their toes. James Madison never worked a day in his life, and neither did Thomas Jefferson. And interestingly, part of it, this is just history. But one of the reasons we actually got the Constitution was because they had the good sense to send Thomas Jefferson the fuck out of the country so that he couldn't fuck it all up.
That's hilarious.
Because he would have. Thomas Jefferson is revered for what a bon vivant he was and what a gourmand and a sort of mad genius and
Hey, Bob, Thomas Jefferson might be our very first historical example of failing upwards.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Was he a good pool player? That's what I want to know.
Well, I mean, as I pointed out, thanks to Thomas Jefferson, Donald Trump is not the first rapist to enter the White House.
Yeah. Yikes. Just taking the 30,000 foot view on this, I'm wondering if the House Democrats should shift tactics a little bit and focus more on volume one of Mueller's report, because that's more or less a slam dunk, you know, and Mueller was trying to bring people's eyes back on the ball, you know, concerning the Russian interference with our election. I mean, if we don't straighten that out, we're in trouble. And the only reason we're in the mess that we're in is because of the Republicans, because of the Republican Party and how easily manipulatable they were. Well, that's a word or not, but, you know, it's pretty clear that the election was interfered with. There's really, you know, whereas it's you know, in terms of volume two of the report, it's shocking to, well, I guess it shouldn't be shocking, but it's just amazing to me how all of a sudden now the Democrats own it, when in reality it should be the Republicans that own, you know, that should be held responsible for the mess we're in right now. But with focusing on impeachment, things are so, I don't know, up in the air. To me, I think it's a stronger argument if they say, look, we need to protect the integrity of our elections, because without voter confidence in our election system, this grand experiment is screwed.
I think, Darlene, part of what you're asserting there about section one, volume one, goes back to why I was wrong. It wasn't Amy Berman Jackson. It was Emmett Sullivan,
right,
who ordered that the Justice Department turn over the materials related to the Flynn case. And I think part of the reason, I mean, and they have frankly thumbed their nose at him, because they refused patently to turn over the transcripts or the evidence about his conversations with Ambassador Kislyak.
Mm.
Okay.
But I think are more of a solid, you know, argument that Democrats can really put Republicans in the hot seat on that, more so than the impeachment piece.
I would like to think so, Darlene, but consider that, you know, part of the reason we didn't necessarily know as much as we should have about what they were about what the Russians were doing is because Mitch McConnell shut down any announcement. He knew about it, and he refused to have it be made public.
Then get James Clapper in there, you know, because he's said it in his book. He's written it in his book. He's stated it, that he went to McConnell, and McConnell said, oh, this, don't believe it. It's Obama. I mean, there's some solid stuff there that really, you know, the impeachment, I think, is almost the penultimate thing we should be concerned about. The ultimate thing we need to be concerned about is the integrity of our election system, because there is such, you know, now the stakes are incredibly high for Trump to be reelected, to avoid being prosecuted, and are incredibly high for Putin to keep Trump in power. I mean, after all, it's pretty clear that the Democrats, you know, Putin didn't want a Clinton presidency. You know, that right there says that the Democrats are far stronger than the Republicans, and, you know, in terms of vis-a-vis a hostile foreign power.
Well, consider what the Justice Department did. in regard to this order of disclosure in Sullivan's court. Mm-hmm. They said, "Well, we're gonna thumb our nose at you, Judge, because we didn't rely on any of the stuff you've ordered us to disclose in determining Flynn's guilt or what his sentence should be." And here's the worst part of it. One of the ones who thumbed their nose was Brandon L. Van Grack of the National Security Division of the DOJ, who was on Mueller's team.
Really?
And they said the judge asked for material that wasn't relevant to Flynn's eventual sentencing. So they overruled a federal judge.
Yeah, an African American federal judge, isn't he?
Yeah, how about that? How's that work?
He's 3/5 a judge, according to the Republicans.
Right. Yeah. Right. What do they do with Amy Berman Jackson's order? Did they respect that? I mean, it sounded like they handed that stuff over, right? In terms of Stone, maybe there's not as much. They're not worried about that as much.
Well, Flynn, I think, had more, much more contact with Kislyak. And
true.
He was actually in the administration, where Stone
and,
was just sort of like this,
right,
yeah.
and was
a peripheral figure.
And was reporting back day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So what's the judge going to do? Is he going to hold the DOJ officials in contempt then? Or what's he going to do, Bob?
Kind of remains to be seen.
I think he kind of has to.
When are they going to start going after their law licenses or statewide grievance committee kind of things? I would think that would scare the shit out of Barr more than anything else.
That's called going after their printing press, right, Darlene?
Yeah.
Print money.
And Bob brings up a good point. I mean, maybe, because really Robert Mueller relied on the attorneys, a certain number of attorneys from the Justice Department itself. Maybe he had individuals within, on his team that were kind of like, untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Not 19 attorneys. That's a lot.
That is a lot of attorneys. They had a lot of cases they indicted, though, for sure. It was a massive undertaking.
Yeah, it was a monumental undertaking. I would agree.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I hope we learn the truth. I'm always skeptical of that, though, with the government. They tell us what they think we can handle.
Yeah.
Like the Warren Commission,
thing.
Kennedy assassination.
Well, don't get me started on that.
I know, Scott. Hey, there you go.
But
I'm throwing you some catnip.
We could all use some catnip. Oh,
Chirp's got a gift today.
Really?
I had a run-in with a local pet supply company, and was not happy with my retail experience, so I called the fucking home office yesterday. This was yesterday. And the lady who is in charge of resolution of such things was so upset at hearing about it, she overnighted via UPS a 3.5-pound bag of Chirps' favorite dry food.
Wow.
Good for Chirps.
So how's that for good?
Nice.
How's that for good stuff?
Well, if that was good customer service, then give their name.
Well, it was Unleashed, which is a division of Petco.
That'll save you about $15, right?
Thereabouts. I think I usually pay about $14.99 with my pals card, my rewards card. Thrilled me to death. I mean, and when she said she was going to send it, I talked to her on the phone yesterday. I just assumed it would show up Monday or Tuesday or whatever, but she fucking overnighted it.
Wow.
Oh,
awesome.
Excellent.
Well, Chirps is a happy kitty.
They want you to be happy, Scott.
Well, I believe me, I'm way happier than I was.
If your kitty's happy, then you're happy, right?
Oh, yeah, because, it's like mama. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
But speaking of mama, And yesterday, Bob, you know how I gave you my litany of horribles in the month of May.
Right.
Tomorrow is June 1st. There is the birth date of my mother, who would have turned 93 tomorrow. And her exact birthday friend was Norma Jean Baker, who we later knew as Marilyn Monroe.
Well, now.
So that's June 1st. And then, of course, June 2nd, the one-year anniversary of the passing of my little friend Punky. And I don't believe it's been a year. It's been a very quiet year, too.
Wow.
Oh.
You know, it's kind of funny you mention that, Scott, because I listened to some of the old shows. I you know, when I went away to Iowa in, like, last September, and I went away somewhere else, and I wrote down all the shows I missed, I heard a show, like, on March 28th when Punky was chirping very happily in the background.
Oh, yeah.
This last year.
Yeah. Well, well, tomorrow, not tomorrow, but Sunday, I will post a couple of links to YouTube videos of him at his chirpy best. So anybody who's on Facebook with me will get to sing along.
Nice.
Sing along if you know the words.
Nice. And I also listened to the show on October 23rd when that Nazi plane crashed on the 101 freeway going north, and Tracy called in from the traffic jam.
Isn't it amazing what happens
Nazi
here? Yeah,
plane?
I do.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I must have been sleeping that day. Nazi plane?
It was an experimental plane. Yeah, by one of these like these flight organizations that like vintage airplanes. They keep them airworthy and stuff.
It was used in a movie.
Yeah. I never found out how long Tracy was in that jam. I was kind of curious to find out.
I think I remember that now that you.
It was a bad day.
It was a bad day for traffic, but it was a great show. It was a great call you had with her. I felt so sorry for her charge, who was like kind of whimpering and whining because they didn't want to be in the car, you know?
Yeah, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, you're on the 101 or the 6 and 4/8 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. She drives around a lot of special needs kids, actually. So that's a lot of times those are her charges. So... Yeah. So I can relate to that. I've got a son who's Asperger's.
Well, this show, in a lot of ways, is people's window on the world, you know?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of shit that goes on in the Horn family.
There is. There is. And I actually saw a film. I YouTubed that crash, the airplane crash, and I saw a video of the airplane coming in onto the freeway. And it looked like it was going to land successfully, but apparently a car was in its way, so it had to kind of veer left. And then it hit the center divider. I didn't see that part of it. I saw the result.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that must have been awful. Was there survival?
And it was a vintage German aircraft?
Yeah, it was like a vintage World War II plane. It was a German model, apparently.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it probably wasn't original. It was probably based on... a German model. It wasn't the actual thing, I don't think. But
yeah,
you know.
Made to look like it or something, right? Yeah,
yeah, like, well, a model.
Those Germans, I mean, they know engineering and they know machinery and automotive, especially.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So
when did this happen?
It was just painted up with German markings.
Yeah,
yeah, like an Iron Cross. Yeah, last October 23rd, darling.
Oh, okay. And with that. I hope there were survivors, but maybe.
Yeah, yeah, there was only, the pilot was the only occupant, and he survived. Apparently, he suffered some singed hair. That was about it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So he's lucky.
No. Yeah, it was very lucky. It looked like a very crowded freeway when he landed.
Yes,
and
yeah.
They asked the guy, he was interviewed, and he stated, without question, we are not German, we are Swiss.
So. I know nothing.
Well, y'all, it's been wonderful, and I appreciate your patience putting up with me being late this evening. I really, really do.
No problem.
Sure, Bob.
I've got another 5:30 morning tomorrow.
Oh boy.
And a 5:30 Monday and a 5:30 Sunday. Wow.
Yeah.
What we do for our kids?
Is it getting overtime?
No, not so far. I mean, he will eventually, but
why not?
Eventually he will. Well, because the state has been gutted by Republicans and we don't have labor laws anymore. That's why. But, I mean, he will eventually.
How long of a drive is that, Bob? I mean, what's the distance to
time? It's a 50-mile round trip.
Holy fuck.
And, so you're, like, talking an hour and a half or so, or what, Bob?
Yeah, it's about, you know,
almost 2 hours.
Under the best of circumstances, 40 minutes over and 40 minutes back.
So once you drop him off, do you stay there and wait till he's done working, or do you go back home?
Oh, hell no, it's a 12-hour shift. That's why I was late to the mic this evening.
Oh, okay.
Because he works 7 to 7.
Oh, wow.
And that means I got to be there to pick him up. And so until such time as I can effectuate the repairs on the second vehicle to get him in it on the road, mm-hmm. this is going to go on for a while.
Well, be sure this is sleeping.
Hasn't he got a paycheck yet?
Got his first one today.
Oh, good. That's great.
But it was...
Have him endorse it and say, I'm going to get the car fixed.
Well, I mean, there wasn't enough to do it. It was partial. It was
so
really
partial. So he's working for the transportation department there in West Virginia?
No.
How many hours?
35.
Okay. What's he doing, Bob?
He's doing security.
Oh, okay.
And, okay,
because I know you had training as like a flagman for a while there.
Well, that didn't work out because that turned out to be a con.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they wanted him to pay them for the privilege of working for them, and I said, no.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, there's something wrong with that picture whenever that happens.
Pay
huh?
for the school before we hire you.
Right.
Yeah, oh, jeez. Yeah, sorry. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is, so.
I'm so glad I'm retired.
I'm so glad you had a union. Yeah, you got to remember
that. Well, I got tired of talking to people on job sites that were getting screwed at a prevailing wage.
Yeah, well, see, that's when the Republicans took over here in West Virginia, Sparky, the first two things they did was get rid of prevailing wage and imposed right to work.
Mm.
So, and you know, so for all intents and purposes, like I said, we don't have a Department of Labor. And if you want to complain, you can do it while you're unemployed.
Right.
I mean, it really sucks. It really, really does.
Jeez.
But, you know, next, and by the way, you know, next week, of course, we'll have programs Monday, Tuesday, and hopefully Wednesday. And then get up bright and surly on Thursday and head for the North Georgia Mountains. I'm looking forward to seeing Sailor Chick there, among others. And so it's going to be a little bit hairy next week too, but I finalized the menu, and it should be fun. I mean, the food should be good, and I know it'll be fun.
It'll be a blast. Take my word for it. The last one in the North Georgia Mountains was great. Now this one is it in the same area, Bob? Or
Steve would be better for that. It's not in the same exact town. It's a little ways over.
Is it in the Chattahoochee National Forest or not?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay.
But I mean, there's a lot of green and a lot of mountains around there, so it's probably a stone's throw away.
Right.
And there are some. It's the same weekend as some Highland Games.
Okay.
And sadly, I have not been able to put together the requisite scratch to get the official Kincaid tartan kilt. So I'll just have to live with that disappointment. But that's okay.
Oh well. Next time you can do that, right?
Well, yeah, something like that. I don't know. Me, kilt, legs, you know. I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know,
T-shirt.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, chicks do dig the long ball, Bob. So you never know. They might like the kilt on you.
Don't say long ball. Don't say that. let's see.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help that.
Yeah. And almost everybody made it through dinner this evening without being repulsed. So we've got a winner there, too.
I haven't eaten dinner yet.
Right. So you're safe, right? See?
You're good.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks to everybody for getting us through the month of May. Thank you so very much. Just a reminder, come Monday, for anybody who likes a challenge, Shirley's Memorial Challenge will be on the table Monday,
And so if you want to participate in that, that'd be awesome. And we'll see what the weekend brings. And I kind of do that with one eye scrunched because, well, you know, the 15-millisecond news cycle now. But again, thanks to everybody who keeps this program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.